Blog Talk Radio. My Blog Talk listeners, how are you guys this afternoon? Or let me say that again. Evening. I've already said that once, huh? I hope you guys have had a great weekend and happy belated Memorial Day. I'm hoping you guys had a safe and productive time off from work. Some of you guys are still off. I know I had a great time. I went on vacation, and I had the opportunity to visit my girlfriend in Rock Hill, South Carolina. That's why I didn't have a show last week, because by the time I would have gotten on air, it would have been, I was in the club, and I don't think you would want me in the club doing my show. You wouldn't have heard me. So I had decided to not do a show that night because of that. Getting back to my time, my vacation, and where I went for vacation, I had an opportunity to visit Rock Hill, South Carolina. I don't know what's wrong, fumbling today. And I had an opportunity to visit a very beautiful place. South Carolina is a very beautiful place. We drove down there and I flew back. And one of the interesting areas that I went into, which was like right down the street from where my girlfriend worked at, we walked to have lunch, one day. And it's called Old Town Bristow. If you guys are very familiar with your black history, you will remember that as the McCorries, if I'm not mistaken, lunch counter, luncheon. And it's where the infamous Friendship Nine set in at the counter in protest during the Civil Rights Movement. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about. And the ideal to be in a place like that gave me the chills, because I think about what these people went through, getting eggs thrown at them, spit on, kicked, and everything, just to prove a point that to this day still makes a difference, that would, you know, go down in history, our civil rights and our black history. And I just thought it was very interesting. And I took pictures. My girlfriend was telling me that one of the guys used to come in all the time, and she's actually sat down and had a good conversation with him. But he wasn't there the day that we went. I don't think it was hardly anybody in there then that day. But we really enjoyed ourselves. The food was great. I would like to tell them they have great food there. And it's called the Old Town Bristow. That's the after they took it over, a new person took it over and renovated it. That's what it's called. And let's see. Trying to figure out where did I... I want to make sure I've gotten this information correctly so that, lunch counter at the Old Town Bristow, that's what it's called. And I know you guys can't see the picture, and I probably need to put it up on my front page. there's a picture of one of the guys. Matter of fact, not one of them. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them that's in this picture so far. I do know that one of the Friendship 9 guys have passed away. I did find that out. Matter of fact, on a news article from the Herald is the name of the newspaper it was in. Very, very interesting stuff, man. It gave me chills, actually, to know that I was in that spot. And I love historical landmarks, so I'm hoping to see some more before God takes me away from here. Being able to go different places to me is so fascinating. You hear me rustling these papers. I want to make sure I have all this stuff in place before I get started. Now, if anyone who wants to talk to me, you may call in at 347-677-1749. Let me repeat that number again. 347-677-1749 is the number to call in. Now, I'm going to tell you this, you guys. I had a problem with people picking up my line while people were calling in. I don't know what I did wrong, but I disconnected some people, and I really apologize for that. I didn't do it on purpose. It's just that I'm trying to learn how to work this. So please forgive me if I hung up on you. I didn't mean to. I truly didn't mean to. Okay. I'm going to try to read a little bit to you. I don't want to go through the whole show reading everything to you. I just want to get some bits and pieces out. And not only that, we're going to also talk about more, not just only the situation that happened then. We're going to kind of go through the history of all these different sit-ins that happened back then and how significant it is to where we're at now. Okay, and that's something we haven't been able to do. Okay, let's see here. Make sure I got this all in order. My papers fell out my hands, so it just like all that I worked for to get this together, it was for naught, because my papers just fell out my hands just now. Okay. So, and we're just going to do a little timeline on stuff that happened back then. Look like I got butterfingers or something. Okay. My dog is sitting here looking at me all crazy, scratching. What are you doing? Y'all hear me talking to my dog? Okay. All right. Let's see if I'm ready. I'm prepared for you guys. Okay. All of this, just to get all this back together again. Okay. Okay, five. There we go. All right. Okay. Now, back to our conversation. Okay, let's, first of all, before we go into the Rock Hill, South Carolina incident, I want to do this. I want to go back, let's go through a timeline that I found, and it's called Before the Sit-In Movement. It says May 17th, 1954, Brown versus the Board of Education Supreme Court rules that the separate but equal is inherently equal and unconstitutional, initially applied only to schools. This declaration emboldens civil rights advocates to act to the end discrimination of all kinds. Okay, the first of the cases that led to this decision had been filed in Clarendon County, South Carolina, under the leadership of local minister Reverend Joseph Delane, whose son, B.B. Delane, will help organize Charlotte's 1960 sit-ins. Okay? So a lot of stuff happened in South Carolina, you know, that we probably weren't really recognizing or familiar with. I didn't know that. Okay, so summer of 54, Charlotte Airport sit-in had Reginald Hawkins and others in Charlotte sit down at a new airport restaurant. They used denial of service to launch a letter-writing campaign with federal aviation agencies and other governmental bodies that result in desegregation of the airport restaurant 2 years later. So South Carolina was a great landmark in our journey during the civil rights. Didn't know all of this. 1955 to 56, Montgomery bus boycott launched by Rosa Parks in Alabama, coordinated by Reverend Martin Luther King. The year-long efforts end segregation on city buses. The much-publicized effort shows the power of nonviolent direct action becomes perhaps the most important single inspiration for a wave of civil rights protests that will continue across the United States into the 1970s. Now, it says, 1955, Rock Hill's St. Anne School desegregates Catholic school and Rock Hill only school in South Carolina that is integrated, headlines the Black Pittsburgh Courier, July 2, 1955. Again, June 23, 1957, sitting at a lunch counter in Durham, North Carolina, one of the several scattered incidents during the 1940s to the 50s included at a library, including at a library in Alexandria, Virginia, at People's Drug Store in D.C., at a lunch counter in Wichita, Kansas, none sparked widespread action. At that time, those places right there weren't really significant during that time. Then it says July to August 1957, Rock Hill bus boycott, Black maid Adeline, number two page is missing. It's probably got some good information on it, too. Give me a second here. Now that I forget that page. I don't have that page. Oh, here we go. Adeline Austin was her name. She gets off a bus. Rather than give up her seat next to a white woman, Rock Hill Black citizens launched a boycott coordinated by the local NAACP leader and the Presbyterian minister, Reverend Cecil Ivory, that puts the bus company out of business. Covered nationally in the Jet magazine, Baltimore, Afro-American, New York, Amsterdam News. Ivory is a graduate of Charlotte's Johnson C. Smith University. Then it says, in September of 1957, school desegregation in Charlotte starts with four black students. Photo of Dorothy Counts being jeered makes national news, but her treatment is much more gentle than at the Little Rock, Arkansas, which desegregates at Bayonet Point the same week. So we were all over the place, and when I say we were, I'm saying we as African Americans who felt the same way that they felt about how important it is for our rights to be known. Then it says in 1958, Berea College trained student leaders J. Charles Jones and Edith Strickland from Johnson C. Smith University joined other black and white student leaders at Berea's College in Kentucky, where Quakers have organized a training course on the principles of nonviolent social change. Teachers from India introduce ideals of Gandhi and also instruct the students how to protect themselves in the event of beatings. Then the sit-ins movements began. Okay? It says, on February 1st, 1960, Greensboro sit-in launched by four freshmen at NC and A&T University, Franklin McCain, David Richmond, Ezell Blair Jr., and Joseph McNeil. Students sit at whites-only lunch counter at downtown Woodworth Variety Store, politely seek service. Protesters from A&T, Black Women's School, Bennett College, and other schools continue the protest for 6 long months. Then February 8, 1960, sit-ins begin in Durham and Winston, North Carolina. Then February 9, 1960, Charlotte sit-in began. Spokesman J. Charles Jones, along with fellow organizers Hayward Davenport and B.B. D. Lane, son of the man who sparked the landmark 1954 Brown decision, lead some 200 students from Johnson C. Smith University to a downtown Charlotte where they sit in at a lunch counter. February the 9th through 11th, sit-ins begin in Fayetteville and Raleigh, North Carolina. Sit-ins at Hampton, Virginia, and Nashville, Tennessee begin February 10th and 11th. February 12th, 1960, Rockin' sit-ins begin the first in South Carolina. About 100 black youths, most from Friendship Junior College, sit down at Woodworth and Macquarie's counters closed until February 23rd. Students then, male students then sit in again. Leroy Johnson, a Friendship student, is spokesperson and organizers include A. Plummer and Arthur Hamm, who have received training from CORE, James T. McCain. Other leaders include Martin L. Johnson, John Moore. Mass meeting in late February called by Reverend Cecil Ivory. Moore sits in March 15th, including a bus station, result in 70 arrests for which NAACP posts bail. Sit-ins will continue through the year. All right. Okay. Then it says Rock Hill Citizens Council organized by whites February 15th with 350 members. Governor Ernest F. Holling says sit-ins are purely to create violence and not to promote anyone's rights. Excuse me. Then it says February to March sit-ins spread throughout South Carolina to Manning, Denmark, Orangeburg, then Columbia and Greenville, then Sumter and Charleston. The Orangeburg action draws 400 participants on its first day, 1,000 on the second, and according to the Baltimore African American. Late February, March, sits in spreads throughout South, including Florida, Alabama, Georgia, April 15th through 17th, 1960, Student Nonviolent Coordinated Committee. College youth from across the U.S. meet at Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina, under leadership of former NAACP organizer Ella Baker, create SNCC to spread and coordinate sit-ins. It will become a key force in the civil rights movement. Now, one faction in the SNCC argues that protesters need to serve jail time, not just get out on bail and pay whatever fine the judge sets. This will show the movement's sincerity and win fresh media attention. Mid-June 1960, Rock Hill wheelchair sit-in, NAACP Reverend Cecil Ivory, long confined to a wheelchair, rolls up to the Macquarie's lunch counter and asks for service. He says he is violating no custom since he is not sitting in a lunch counter seat. He is denied. Accompanied by Arthur Ham, student leader at Friendship, covered nationally in the black press, including Pittsburgh Courier, June 18, 1960. June 1960, Greensboro sit-in partially succeed. Lunch counters now open to black customers. Three more years of protests will be required before all restaurants, movie theaters, and other public places open their doors. July 1960, Charlotte sit-ins partially succeed. Lunch counters now open to black customers. Upscale white tablecloth restaurants will not desegregate until the 13th, when Mayor Stanford Brookshire arranges for pairs of blacks and white business leaders to eat at each other's establishments during the Charlotte's sit-ins. It says also February 19, 1960, Charlotte sit-ins start. Front page story in Charlotte Observer: an estimated 200 students from Johnson C. Smith University participate in orderly protest against what they feel are discriminatory practices at S.H. Crest Company, W.T. Grant Company, F.W. Woolworth, McLean's Company, Leggings Drugs, Belk's Ivory and Sears Robot, J. Charles Jones' spokesperson. Older black leader Dr. Nathaniel Charles calls sit-ins ill-advised. Now, it says February the 12th, 96 students explain Ames JCSU students, okay, I have no links to outside organizations. We're not seeking intermarriage. We don't feel that sitting next to a white person will help us digest our food any better. We just want to be able to sit down and have a cup of coffee like other customers, says Williams to the Charlotte Observer. Now, it says February the 13th, 1960, United Presbyterian Church USA endorses sit-ins to in letter to J. Charles Jones. Counters are closed at McKellen's, Woodworth, Grant's, and Crest, but protests have continued at Leggett and Belk. So what they did was, to keep people from protesting and sitting in, they closed down the counters. Isn't that something? But do you see how far we've come? And I know we've talked about this during Black History, and we did a great segment on the Black History part. I really, really loved doing that, and the information that I learned was, it just blowed my mind. But what I want to say to that, this is so much stuff that we did not know. You know, I didn't know this, and I kind of try to keep myself up with a lot of stuff that goes on, but I had no idea this actually went on, that these people protested to the end to make sure that everything, that we have the rights that we have now. Now, just imagine, you got to think how long ago that was, over 48, almost 49, almost 50 years ago, close to 50 years ago. Do you see how long ago that was? Now, just imagine if that was still going on now. Do you guys think that we'd be able to sit and eat with everybody? Think about McDonald's. Think about Burger King. Think about places like that. Think about a lot of the upscale restaurants, you know, where we weren't allowed to sit and be served correctly. You know, we're good in the kitchen as long as we stay in the kitchen and work and go out the back door. We're not allowed to use the front door of restaurants. You know, it's a lot that went on back then that, you know, we sit around and we proud and we don't want to hear about our heritage and forget about, you know, we have that mindset because we think, oh, nobody didn't do anything for us. But they led the pathway. We were able to go into establishments that back then we were not allowed to go in. And if it wasn't for these people paving the way, we wouldn't be where we're at now. So it's very important for us to know that the fight really isn't over. Okay, we're still fighting to this day. Even with an African-American president in office, we are still fighting for our rights. And it's not that, you know, we deserve all of this and we don't want to work and we don't. You guys have to understand, these people, they did. These were college students. These were working people. You worked all day on their feet. You think of Adeline Austin. She worked all day. You think of Rosa Parks. These people worked all day hard in the white person's kitchen. And the idea that they couldn't sit down or that they had to go to the back of the bus or they wouldn't give their seat up. You guys, all of that ties into how we are now. You know what I'm saying? there, the blood, sweat, and tears in it. The fight is not over. The fight is not. I am proud. I am so proud that I am now a member of the NAACP. I'm proud because I always wanted to be part of something that is there to set standards, to make stuff happen, to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do, and we're making sure that there's justice and democracy for all. And if we don't do that, you guys, we're going to forever. We'll go to our grave not making things better for the rest of us out there. We want to leave something behind. When I die, I don't want to be known as somebody who didn't do anything. I want to be known that I did make a difference in somebody's life, whether it's my husband's, whether it's my son's, whether it's my community. I want to be known that I did try something. I did speak up for something. I did protest something. I want to be known as that because I know that we are not promised tomorrow. And I want to make my time here on earth fulfilling. And I don't want to be bogged down with a lot of negative stuff. I want to see good things happen to other people. And that's just how I am. I don't know how you guys are, but that's how I am. I want to forever see good things happen to people. When there's a way that I can help from something, preventing something bad to happen to someone, I want to be there to do that. And that's my downfall in a lot of situations because I'm always sticking my neck out for people, not to expect for people to, you know, say, okay, thank you for sticking your neck out. But it's just, that's just how I am. I'm not looking for your thank you. I'm looking for the ideal that I've done something and it makes a difference to some people. So that's why it's so important that we know our history. You know, don't blow our history off. Yeah, it's the past, but you can't do the past. You can't do the future or the present without dealing with the past. And because it's so easy for us to just, you know, act a fool unnecessarily when these people have done what they've done to open up the pathway for us with opportunities that we have now that we didn't have before. You know, we need to look at things and be more serious to a certain extent when it comes to this. That's why the word nigger is such a word that we have a problem, the older generation have a problem with. For instance, and I talked to my son about it, and he understands that he's at, you know, he has to understand it. Sometimes he uses the N-word in his song. And I tell him, do you understand the history behind that word? And he says, well, Mom, it's not the word nigger, it's the word nigga. There's a difference. And he tried to explain it to me, but me, I don't hear it any other way, and I can't, you know, he's a grown man. I can't make him stop saying something that he says in his songs, and he has cut it down a lot in his songs because I had a problem with it for a while. So what we have to do is we have to understand where that word comes from and how derogatory it is for someone to call you that. When you're calling a college student that's going to college a nigger, you know what nigger is? It's an ignorant person. Now, obviously, those people were smart enough to go to college, so they couldn't have been that stupid. So you wonder who's the stupid person. You wonder who's the ignorant person. And it's not us. It wasn't our ancestors or our part of our history that were stupid. We were trying to make a difference, and that was the smartest way for us to do it. And I think they did an absolute wonderful job on what they did, the sacrifices. You know, the being sprayed by the fire hoses and the dog bites, you know, and getting beat with billy clubs and all of that stuff. That, to me, that's so significant, you know, and it's so important that we know exactly what happened back then so that we know how we can handle if it happens again to this day. And people, please do not think that history cannot repeat itself, because it can. Okay? Yeah, we got more techno now. We have computers, we have DVD players, we have all this stuff that we didn't have back then. Okay? So just because we have that doesn't mean that the feeling underlying feeling about us has been removed. It hasn't. Okay? It's still there, you know. And it's up to us to make sure that we teach our children and their children, and they teach their children, our history. Our history is very, very important. Very important. And it's not like all the other history, like they want to say, it's not African-American history, it's American history. No, it's not, because American history does not involve completely and thoroughly African-American history. So it's not American history. It's not. I mean, in a sense, it is American history, but we have to watch what we read and what we're learning about our history in connection with American history. And the reason why it should be a difference and a separate is because we can understand that we played a part in our history, okay, and not only American history, but our history by itself is very important, okay, and we need to understand that first before we combine it with American history, because American history is not what they teach them in school. What they teach kids in school is really, truly not the truth, and even I can confess to a lot of stuff that I was taught about our history, about American history, was not true, okay? Nobody wants to tell the deep down dirty story about how we were treated. You know, we get Black history comes up, and, you know, that's when everybody gets nostalgic about Black history. No, it needs to be taught all the time, constantly reminding us so that when we find ourselves saying things and doing things that are totally against who our ancestor fought for us, then we need that. We need that constant reminder of how we should see things and how we should perceive how things should be for us, how our future is. You know, I sometimes listen to a lot of these yuppie type people, and I know that's an old 1980 word, you know, are uppity African-American people that forgotten what our ancestors went through to get them where they're at. That bothers me because, yeah, you have a great education. Yeah, you got all these degrees, and yeah, you got all these gold cards, these platinum cards, and you got all this, but you wouldn't have gotten it if there wasn't someone to lead or make that pathway for you to get to that point. It's not only just your family, your mother and father and your uncle and auntie working hard. You know, they went through a lot to get you to where you're at, okay? So we can't forget, you know, where we came from. Our history is within us. When a person look at us, they don't see us as prestigious, prominent people. They see us as our history says we are. And how the other races have seen us. You know, you think about, like we were talking about the Arizona thing, and I'm not getting off the subject, I'm just kind of tying this in together, how significant it is. Now, if the only reason why they really couldn't do that to us because they know how they brought us over here. If they thought they could get away with doing us like that nowadays, they would do the same thing. But because they're the ones who brought us over here, there's a big difference from how they could do us. But if they thought there was an opportunity where they could do that to us, they would do it. So, and then you have all these other states that are trying to start something the same way. So you have to think about how we have to hold on to what we've been through. But what we need to hold on to our history and know what our history, how it was. That's why I say, because I really believe if there was an opportunity to do us that same way, I think it would happen. I really, really think it would happen. I think that they would try that. Let's see here. I want to give you guys a little music here. go back here. And let's see what we got here. I'm going to give you a little song right now. This is by Songs About Girls, and it's by Planet 10. And we all know who Planet 10 is by now. And let's see how it sounds.
My touch, my name, my eyes, my flesh, the portion of my soul where I hold the same.
Okay. That was Songs About Girls by Planet 10. Like I said before, you know who Planet 10 is. Okay. Now, as I was saying, how important it is for us to keep learning about our American history or our, Afro-American history. And like I said, I just read to you guys different scenarios that I didn't know that happened, timelines, about sit-ins and protests that happened just so that we can have the rights that we have today. And I just also reiterated that if the Arizona law could be, immigration law could be passed, was passed back then, which they couldn't have done because they brought us over here, so there was no way that what they were going to do, send us back. Well, they had an opportunity to do that over 400 years ago, and they didn't do it. So, enough about that. Then we're going to talk about, I was talking about the Friendship Nine because I did have an opportunity, like I said before, I was able to go to the restaurant and eat there, and I did say the food was great. I enjoyed it. The people there were nice, too. And I did take pictures. They're on my website. If you ever go to Facebook, Salita McCall, I have pictures on there of the place where I took pictures at. I mean, the lunch counter, the names on the each chair. And also I took a picture of the sign that's outside of it, of the restaurant, in the name of the restaurant. Okay. Let's talk about the Friendship Nine. It says it was a group of African-American men who went to jail after staging a sit-in at a segregated McCrory's lunch counter in Rock Hill, South Carolina in 1961. The group gained nationwide attention because they followed an untried strategy called Jail No Bail, which lessened the huge financial burden on the civil rights groups were facing as the sit-in movement spread across the South. They became known as the Friendship Nine because eight of the nine men were students at Rock Hills Friendship Junior College. They are sometimes referred to as the Rock Hill Nine. Okay, it says the first sit-in happened in February 1960 when four black students from North Carolina Agricultural and Technical College sat down at a segregated Woodsworth counter in Greensboro, North Carolina. The movement spread across the South, reaching Rock Hill on February 12th, when about 100 black students staged sit-ins at the various downtown lunch counters. Over the next year, several sit-ins were held in the city. So that's why I said it's so good for us to know our heritage. It's so good to know where we came from and what our people went through so that we could be here today. It says the arrest on January 31st, 1961, students from Friendship Junior College and others picketed McCrory's on Main Street in Rock Hill to protest the segregated lunch counters at the business. They walked in, took seats at the counter, and ordered hamburgers, soft drinks, and coffee. The students were refused service and ordered to leave. When they didn't, they were arrested. The next day, 10 were convicted of trespassing and breach of the peace and sentenced to serve 30 days in jail or to pay a $100 fine. One man paid a fine, but the remaining nine, eight of whom were Friendship students, chose to take the sentence of 30 days hard labor at the York County Prison Farm. Their choosing jail over a fine or bail marked a first in the civil rights movement and sparked the jail no bail strategy that came to be emulated in the other places. Okay, as of 2007, eight of the Friendship Nine are living. Robert McCollum, he died on August the 7th, 2006. John Gaines, Thomas Gaither, at the time he was a field secretary with the Congress of Racial Equality and was the only one of the nine who was not a Friendship student. Clarence Graham, W.T. Dub Massey, Willie McLeod, James Wells, David Williamson Jr., and Mac Workman. Mr. Williamson is the one that I was telling you earlier that my girlfriend said used to come in there and she used to sit down and have conversations with him. Okay, it says, what made the Rock Hill action so timely was that it responded to a tactical dilemma that was arising in the SNCC discussions across the South, how to avoid the crippling limitation of scarce bail money, wrote the Taylor Brants in Parting the Waters, his Pulitzer Prize winning account of the civil rights movement. The obvious advantage of jail no bail was that it reversed financial burden of protest, costing the demonstrators no cash while obligating the white authorities to pay for jail space and food. The obvious disadvantage was that the staying in jail represented a quantum leap and commitment above the old barrier of arrest, lockup, and bail out. Okay. So that's what made it so significant, and I didn't know that. I didn't know that part. And I'm going to try to upload this picture I have of them sitting at the counter. If I'm not mistaken, they are sitting at the counter, or they're at a desk. I'm sorry, not a desk, a table at a dinner, at a luncheon. The Friendship Nine. Very, very significant information, very, very significant part of our history that a lot of us, really, to be honest with you, would rather forget. Okay? We stayed busy. Our ancestors or our people who led the way for us, our leaders, including Martin Luther King, led a way for us, and I'm glad that they did. You had students that were doing the same thing. They had, on February the 7th, it says 1961, mass meeting, Rock Hill, 300 African Americans crowd a meeting of the committee for the promotion of human rights led by the local NAACP, President Reverend Cecil Ivory. Guest speaker include SNCC founder Ella Baker, Core Field Secretary James T. McCain, and a white activist Connie Curry of the U.S. National Student Association in Atlanta. Meeting votes to again visit Prison Farm on Sunday. That's when they were in, they went to visit the prison farm because he was the only one. Remember, I explained to you that he was the only one who was not a member, who was not a student. I'm sorry. He was not a student at the college. So he was able to go, and I think he was the one who paid the fine also. So he was able to get out. So they went to visit them why they did the 30 days, which I thought was very good. February 8, 1961, white protester Edward Hahn, formerly of Vanderbilt University, joins the picket line in front of Macquarie's. It marked the first time a white person had participated in demonstrations in Rock Hill since they began over a year ago, according to Rock Hill Evening Herald. There are well over 100 pickets in two long lines marching up and down the sidewalk between Elk A and Hampton Street on Main Street. The picketing began about 11:50 a.m. and ended at 12:25 p.m. Whoa, they picketed long. That's really not long. That's about an hour and something. I was thinking p.m. I was thinking nighttime. February 10th through 11th, support for the students, Margaret H. Craig, white, supports the protest in a letter to the editor published in the Rock Hill Evening Herald calling segregation a violation of a cardinal principle of Christianity, equality before God. Dean Raymond H. Jackson at Friendship College says there are no plans to penalize students for cutting class. Most protests have occurred during natural break in classes 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. And a letter to the editor, Reverend Ivory, says that neither he nor the NAACP had the distinguished honor of planning the students' jailing. They did it themselves. So think about that. These people, these students, because they were students, took the time out, and they were smart enough to plan their protests between lunchtime so that they weren't cutting class, so when it was over with, they could go back to class. That was a very smart move they made. So that the dean of the college couldn't say, okay, now we're going to kick them out or we're going to penalize them. They were not penalized because they did it in a smart way. Now, the students that did the 30 days, that might have been a whole different story. I don't know how they handled that one. But overall, they did something that was very smart. And the ideal that they had the first white protester during the whole thing came in and participated in the march and the sit-in and the protesting was a very good thing. You know, people, I'm not saying all white people or all Caucasian people are the blue-eyed devils and they're mean and hateful. There were some of them that saw the way that we saw things, and they just didn't believe that we should have been treated that way. And they did stand up. You think about back in history when I was when we talked about slavery. You had abolitionists, you know, that were totally against slavery, and they did all they could to make sure that we were taken care of back then. So they saw the wrong in it, you know, and I believe this protester during this time saw the wrong in what they were going through, what we were going through. I want to say we because I feel that they did something to enlighten my life and make my life better. So that's the reason why I'm saying we. And I think that was a very significant time for them also with all that was going on, that there were a lot more whites that were being more involved in what we call crossing the line, coming on our side, seeing that a lot of stuff that we were doing was not wrong. We weren't trying to start any fights. We were just doing something that we needed to take a stand for, and that was to make sure that we got treated equally, that we were able to sit down and enjoy our meals, spend our money in the same places that everybody else did. And I don't think anything was wrong with that. And like I said before, that was a very significant part of our history that to me is very important, and we need to talk about it more. You know, we got Juneteenth coming up. Again, I want to, if it's around the time that I need to, I want to talk about this again or bring some parts of this back up again because it's very important. You know, it's actually a Texas-type celebration, but it's very important that we know about our history. If we can't teach nothing else, we need to know our history. Yeah, I know about Christopher Columbus, George Washington, and all of those people. Those people are important, too. But I think our history, our own very own history, is very, very, very important, and that we should keep on learning more and more. Because, like I said, every time I do a show and it's dealing with information like this, I say it myself how surprised I am, not because I hadn't studied it or because I didn't go over it before it came on air. I do it because I'm just so fascinated that we did this. This is part of us. This is part of who we are and how important that is. And so it's always something new we're learning, and we need to continue to teach our children about who we are and where we come from. You know, we didn't just pop out the air. Somebody struggled to get us here. I'm not only talking about us as kids and mothers and fathers. I'm talking about history-wise. Somebody struggled so that we can be here, and it's living proof, you know, that these kids, nine kids, made a decision to do what they did, you know, so that we could sit at that counter 40 or 50 years later, or 10 years later, or 5 years later, was able to sit and enjoy coffee and eat and spend our money in these places. So we need to keep that in mind when we forget about our history. We should never forget about our history. I don't care. Our history should be taught 24/7. Our history should be taught not only 1 month out of the year, but all 12 months. Something about our history should be taught or said or known about, or we should pick something from a month and take and study that part of history, that's black history, that something profound happened that month, We should do that so that we can continue to talk about and learn and know about who we are. And believe it or not, it makes you feel a little bit different when you know this happened for me, okay? This happened so that I can sit here, you know. I can go in those stores and shop. I can sit at a counter and eat my food and nobody is treating me differently. You know what I'm saying? And I'm being served the same way a white person or a Latino or a Chinese or an Indian person is treated when they sit down. That's what's important. That's what's important. I'm running out of time. I thank you guys for listening to me rant and rave about Friendship 9 and about my little vacation. I just want you guys to understand how important it is for us to keep in mind what our ancestors, our African-American brothers and sisters went through during the Civil Rights Movement, what they went through to get us where we're at now. That's what I want to leave with you guys and how serious it is for me to be able to tell you guys about this. And I'm quite sure you've heard the story from someone else somewhere else, but I'm telling you from my what I've learned and how important it is, you guys, to continue to believe in the word and know that this stuff actually happened to us, okay? Not to just them. It happened to us. We are part of this just as well as they were because it did make a profound mark on the way that we see things, you know, and it is a landmark part of our history that we need to keep up with. I'm hoping next week everything will be fine and dandy and that I'll be able to come back to you guys again next week. I would like to end this show with telling you guys how important for us, and I said it before, to know who we are and to know where we came from, not only through our mom and dad, but through our ancestors and how they paved the way for us. You guys, keep that in mind in anything and everything you do. When you take on something, keep that in mind. When you think that our people, we should be ashamed of them and not praise them and uplift them, keep that in mind. Look where you came from. Go back and listen to this. Let me be able to tell you what happened back then so that you can remind yourself of where you are now. I want to say good night to all my Blog Talk listeners. Thank you for listening. Even though you didn't get an opportunity to call in, that's fine. But you can listen to this show later on. I thank you guys again. You have a great night. And I love you guys. And let's see. If I got 2 minutes. I want to see if I can bring you something.
Something I can't.